B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, then. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger Maserati, brought to you by DraftKings, presenting sponsor, both here on 98.5, the Sports Hub, and on the app and our internet streams, which you can always catch us. I highly encourage that on your voice-activated device, the app on your phone, or just 98.5thesportshub.com. Also, we beam across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston on the simulcast. It's Tuesday, February 15th. Felger, Maz, and Murray here from our Town Fair Tire Studios. It's a Tuesday during the football season, Maz. You know what that means?
Big boy Tuesday.
That's what that means. And on the Zoom, you can already hear the big fella chuckling and chiming in. Big boy, Greg Bedard from the Boston Sports Journal. Where are you coming to us from?
From my house.
Okay.
I'm no longer in the woods.
All right. Doesn't sound too shabby. Not too bad. Okay, we'll get you up on the simulcast here in a moment, but we're pretty much hardcore football, Patriots, and obviously a little bit of Brady and the Buccaneers with Bedard. This is a weekly spot, the Tuesday football spot. Started with Wiggy 11 years ago, and we've got Bedard now for the last, what is this, like 5 or 6 years at
Something
least?
Something like that. Six, seven, yeah.
Okay, whatever it is. So we do a three up, three down at 2:35, 10 questions around the league at 3:20. Standard drill, your calls in and around those two segments at 617-779-0985. Greg, what should Patriots fans feel best about from Sunday against Miami?
The best? I actually think it's the defense. I thought that the replacements, to me, the biggest issues were on defense. Yes, Cam Newton and the offense, all of that was a novelty. What's it going to look like? I mean, I don't know. Did people think that Cam Newton was going to trip over himself and not be able to gain a few yards? I what we saw on Sunday out of the offense was pretty much what we've been talking about all offseason. They kept it very simple. There are things they can build off of. And I didn't think that they were, you know, outstanding or anything on offense. I thought it was about as good as you could do for a first game with no preseason and all that. But they only scored 21 points. We know they left a lot of points on the field. But to me, I had the biggest answers because this team, it's not going anywhere unless the defense is good again. And they have a lot of guys to replace. Kyle Van Noy, Hightower, Patrick Chung. We all know the list. And I thought that guys like that we didn't know about, that we had big question marks, Juwan Bentley, Chase Winovich, Adrian Phillips, Byron Cowart in the middle. All of those guys played really well on Sunday. And yes, it's the Dolphins. And they had an offensive line that has four new starters, two rookies, Ted Karras at center. So, you know, it's not exactly the 1990s Cowboys. But to me, that was the most impressive thing out of this game, that they were able to get good play out of those guys, and sort of it allowed me to at least take a breath and be like, okay, it's not going to be a train wreck on defense, because this team needs to be, look, they need to be great on defense. And I think they, after Sunday, I think they have more of a potential to be that after what we saw.
And the key guys are the guys that you mentioned. I mean, so you sort of put the secondary into the bank. That's going to be a good secondary. You're talking about the guys replacing the guys that have opted out or have left. The linebacker group, maybe some of those guys on the edge, that's who you're looking at. Winovich, et cetera.
Yeah, Winovich is a guy who last year, and look, he's been, especially since the game, he played very coy in the offseason, because even, I think it was Thursday or Friday before the game, I asked him some pointed questions about do you have to be better against the run to be a three down player on this team? And he sort of played coy, and he's like, I don't want to identify my weaknesses. But as soon as the game was over and we saw him being a three down player, we saw him making plays against the run to the point where they had him at nose tackle in the goal line package, which if you would have told me that a year ago, I would have said you're completely crazy. But that he played so well against the run, he admitted he wasn't a good enough player last year against the run. He was just a situational player, and he really took it upon himself to get bigger, to get stronger, to get more in tune with the mental game. And he looks like a three-down player now. Well, we'll see how he does against Dwayne Brown and the Seahawks this week out there. But for 1 week, he looks like he has the potential to be an every down starter on the outside for the Patriots.
Greg, we talked in the postgame, though, about the lack of a pass rush. They only had the one sack with Derek Rivers after watching the film. Is that still a concern, or was it better than we thought?
It was better than I thought. I think they got pressure on about 38% of the snaps. Some of it came very late. Look, there was Wise, and I think Simon sort of fell on Fitzpatrick at the end. But, you know, going back and looking at some of the turnovers, the Stephon Gilmore turnover was forced by Adrian Phillips coming on a little twist up the middle. One of the other interceptions was forced by Juwan Bentley coming up the middle. So there was pressure coming. I wouldn't say it was great, and I will say that the Dolphins' tackles, the first-round tackle, held up pretty well. Steady Teddy Karras kind of got his butt whooped a few times in the middle. But I thought that the pressure was okay for week one. They need to do it again against Seattle for them to win out there.
Offensively for the Patriots, you take your shirt off for the offensive line. You liked it. You took your pants off, not just your shirt, your pants.
Oh, you took it all off.
I took full it all Monty. Off. Yeah. All off. Oil and everything.
Oh, yeah, no question. Rubbing yourself in Crisco.
I thought it was really, really good. And the surprising thing after watching the game back was that actually the two best players were the tackles. I would say Jermaine Illuminor was tremendous in this game. In the run game, he got physical. He tossed a few guys aside. He showed a real nasty edge, which is good. I thought Isaiah Wynn had a really strong game. I thought the inside guys actually, there weren't many errors. But they had them on the inside. Some of it, they were put into bad positions just because I don't think Cam has the ability right now to check out of some bad looks. And we saw them run into some bad plays in that game. I think that'll get better. But so the offensive linemen were sort of put in bad positions. But I would say the offensive line was outstanding. What we talked about coming in, that it was going to be bully ball, that Josh McDaniels looked and said, all right, what do we do well? It's our offensive line. It's being physical. It's getting Jakob Johnson, the fullback, out there. It's Cam running people over. Let's be tough as hell on offense and really take it to the defense.
How did you feel about the way they threw the ball, and specifically Newton's arm strength and accuracy?
I had no problem with his arm strength. Haven't, all offseason in the practices that we've seen. His accuracy was, look, he completed 79% of his passes. I had him down for three high passes. That's sort of, I'll be keeping track of that every week, because he has a tendency, if he gets a little lazy in his footwork, to be a little bit high. I thought, yes, Edelman dropped that first pass. It was a drop, but it also could have been thrown better. He was wide open in the middle of the field. Why has he got to leave his feet for that pass? I thought he put Edelman in another tough position where he took an unnecessary hit on a little out. Those are the type of things that can accumulate over the season. I think they need to limit. But I didn't have Newton down for one plus throw in the game. I thought it was a very easy game throwing the ball, well scripted. I thought the Dolphins were terrible defensively. They had a terrible plan. Josh McDaniels completely toyed with them. I couldn't believe they played as much man coverage as they did. So they just motion a tight end or a back out of the backfield. There goes a safety. Then all of a sudden they run play action. And of course, Alandon Roberts, love you, mean it, but everybody remembers him tackling a running back without the ball in the backfield against the Ravens. He was him and Baker, the other linebacker, were like spinning tops out there with all the play action and read action. They had no chance, so it made for easy throws. It's not going to be that easy going forward.
Okay, is that your biggest worry about how defenses play them? And can the Patriots play offense like that going forward? Will they be allowed to?
It's a great question, Mike.
Thank you.
The short answer is no. I think the Dolphins made it very easy on the Patriots because they played so much man coverage. I thought they were one of the highest man coverage teams. Of course, Flores, that's what he did here with the Patriots. They played a lot of man coverage on Sunday, and they made it easy. I don't think, especially Seattle on Sunday, we all know they're cover three. They're going to do what they do, their system. And that makes it a little bit, they're built in a little bit better to naturally defend what the Patriots are doing. And I'd say, and I'm sure we'll get into this, and I'm sure you'll get a lot of calls going forward, but my biggest takeaway watching this and watching some of the plays, some of the looks that they got from the Dolphins, I kept thinking to myself, God, it'd be nice if he could check to a vertical, to a go route to somebody. And yes, they have N'Keal Harry that they could go back shoulder to.
No, they don't.
But, but man, this offense, we've talked about in years past, take off the top. I'm not talking about taking off the top. I'm talking about actually beating a guy down the field, throwing over the top. And that to me, after week one, is the one missing piece in this offense that I think if things continue and they're still in it and still doing well at the trade deadline, I think they got to look at. And of course, you'll get OBJ, Allen Robinson, all sorts of calls, guys who are disgruntled. But yeah, I think more than ever, I think they could use one of these guys with this offense.
I'm sorry, Maz. I know you got to follow up on that. Can you just hold it for 1 second? Because
sure.
I do want a Brady take before we hit the break, and we can invite the Brady thoughts as well with Greg Bedard after watching Tampa and after watching that. What's your takeaway from that game? How much of it is Brady? How much of that is Arians? What would be your lead thought on that?
My lead thought is Bruce Arians is a buffoon. That's my lead thought.
I mean, that's a pretty good one.
I mean, that he went out there. I mean, just if you watch the two games, if you watch the way Josh McDaniels approached this game, which was keep it simple, don't get out of your element, we haven't done anything, and then you watch what the Bucs are doing, including that sack where they had like three different screen options on it at midfield and Brady had to take a sack. It was just dumb. It was total typical Arians where he just, his ego gets ahead of himself. I just think, and I'm sure we'll get into this more, but I think at some point in time, there's going to be a battle coming between Brady and Arians, because you could tell they're trying to do a lot of the stuff Tom does, but Bruce at some point is not going to want to go down with his ship again like he did with Jameis, and which we already saw him throwing Tom Brady under the bus. But I think he's going to say, you know what? We had no problem moving the ball and throwing the ball and scoring points last year. I want to go back to my offense, and then we'll see the battle between Brady and Arians.
Greg, how did you think Brady looked? Brady.
I thought he looked fine. I went through it and I had him for 9+ throws, 5- plays, and I had about 8 or 9 coaching decisions that I thought were just dumb.
So you had Brady at a +4, and Arians at a -8. Yeah, that's too high.
Go ahead. I mean, I thought he was good. I mean, even on the you can give him, you could say, oh well, you know, he got 3 pass interference calls. Those throws were dimes. I mean that. First throw to Godwin, that was actually a wrinkle. That was one thing I liked that Bruce Arians did. That was a wrinkle on a Patriots staple play, and I really liked it, and I bet you the Patriots sort of borrow from it at some point. But I thought Brady threw the ball well. It's just, you could tell they're completely out of sync, and they're trying to be two different things. They're trying to appease Brady and do some of the stuff that they've done well, and right now they're fighting against each other.
Okay. Football with Bedard, with you. Two open lines at 617-779-0985. What you feel best about from Sunday? What should worry you the most? How are teams going to play the Patriots? That's the thing I'm most interested in. I just can't imagine, never mind zone man, just setting the edge. The Dolphins just allowing Newton to run around end like he was some eighth grade quarterback to me. It would surprise me if the future opponents let him do it. And then again, it wouldn't surprise me because the league is stupid. But like that, I mean, is that going to be a weekly thing where he's allowed to run like that and get the edge like that easily?
Yep.
Would stun me. But then again, it wouldn't. And thoughts on Brady and Tampa Bay with the big fella. Calls right after this.
Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
And sometimes because you agree.
I agree with Matt.
And sometimes because deep down you like the pain.
Pulling each other's shirts off and licking each other's faces.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Understanding that you want to take advantage of Cam's ability to run the ball. He ran it 15 times yesterday, and I was just curious, from your perspective, if you thought that was something that could continue, or would you like to, you know, kind of manage it a little bit better so he's not, you know, taking that many body blows in a game?
Yeah, well,
you know, some of those runs were option type runs, so we don't know who's going to get the ball. Depends on how the defense plays it. There's not like, you know, handing off ball up to the halfback running up the middle. So when you run plays that have, you know, some type of an option to them, then, you know, you don't know for sure who's going to get the ball. So that's just, you know, an unpredictable part of that play. It's like running a pass play when you, unless it's a screen pass, when you drop back and throw the ball, you don't know which receiver you're throwing to. It depends on the coverage and the matchup that you get. So it's the same thing on an option type run. It could go to, the back quarterback could keep it or the quarterback could hand it off. It really depends on how the defense, you know, how they defend the play. So, you know, I think those numbers are, with all due respect, I mean, I think they're a little bit skewed. The defense, if they played a certain way, they could, you know, put the ball in whoever's hands they want to, if they want, you know, if they really want to declare who's going to get the ball. So we'll see how teams play us going forward on those type of plays. If we run those again, I don't know. We'll, you know, do what's best each week based on the team that we're playing and how we feel like we, you know, can attack them.
Set the edge. Don't let Cam Newton run around the end. And he's handing it off.
Yeah, let him give it to Sony Michel.
Okay, but, you know, of course, Bill's burying it a little bit. I mean, Cam Newton running was a heavy part of that game plan, and he knows it. So the question is, are they willing to expose him to that punishment? And I hope the answer is yes. I hope they're all willing, because otherwise, what's the point of Cam Newton? There was another, and again, Greg Bedard's with us, and I'll get his talk in 1 second. I just want to play this other piece of Belichick sound that I just loved. They asked about, and this was yesterday during his availability, about tearing up the Patriots playbook and starting with something new and what that was like. Here was Bill's answer.
We always try to do what's best for the team to win. And, you know, everything we've done for the last 20 years, and rightfully so, has been for Tom Brady, was for Tom Brady. Everything was dedicated to him other than the games that he didn't play in, like, you know, when Castle played, or Jimmy, and then Jacoby, when Brady was suspended.
Oh!
So, you know, there were times when we had to plan differently, but, you know, when your starting quarterback has things that he's good at or things that you can take advantage of, then I think you try to take advantage of them.
Anytime you can slip in that suspension, you slip it in there. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Suspended.
Also, I'm surprised I'm surprised he referenced him by name.
Well, it's his last name, not the first name, which is a term I feel like is more a little bit more affectionate.
But the first
Brady was Jimmy. Suspended.
Well, I was just Jimmy saying, and Jacoby.
I mean, just in case you all forgot. So, how come again they had to play Garoppolo and Brissett?
When Brady was suspended.
Oh, that's right. He was suspended for cheating and deflating footballs. Got it, Bill. Thank you for reminding me. I forgot why those guys had to be in there. Bam! Shot! Love it. But it's also sort of the undercurrent there, Bedard, is that, yeah, well, I mean, Brady's not the only quarterback that we can game plan for, and if we have a different guy, we game plan for that quarterback. And it's just sort of a slight little nod to system versus player, and we can tailor our system to whatever player, and Tom's not the only quarterback on the planet. And oh, by the way, in case you forgot, he was suspended for cheating. So I just love
Brady
that.
Was suspended.
Oh, God, I love
I'm
that.
I'm sure you did, Felger. You did love that.
I forgot why those guys were playing. Thank you for reminding me, Bill. Okay, to your calls with Greg Bedard, Steve at BC. Go ahead, Steve.
So with these running quarterbacks, to me, it's really just a matter of time before they eventually get injured. And you saw with Cam on Sunday, he was taking some licks out there. I agree with you, Mike. If he's not out there running the ball, I don't really see the point of him on this team. But there was a handful of plays on Sunday where I thought, why can't he just, you know, slide, avoid the contact, and not need to pick up enough extra couple yards?
Steve, absolutely. Even his second touchdown, step out at the two, it's first and goal at the two. You know what I mean? Or what maybe was second and one at the two. I can't remember what the down and distance was. But, you know, you don't need the touchdown there. You're rolling, and it's early downs. And, you know, so he could have been smarter about the thing. How do you weigh in on that whole issue, Greg?
Well, number one, I think, you have the same argument with athletic quarterbacks. I mean, whether it's Aaron Rodgers or RG3 or Lamar Jackson, everybody's going to say they should do this, they should do that. Like, but they are who they are. Like, you can't, yes, you learn, you mature, you do. And I do think Cam slides a lot more than he did earlier in his career. But sometimes sometimes you're just the player that you are. And I think he sees the pylon. He sees the goal line. It's go time for him. And so I don't have a big criticism about that. Yes, I want to see him protect himself a little bit more, but in terms of, this won't sustain. It just won't. I mean, we've seen it in his career, especially the past few years. And I do think I disagree with you. I think they do need to protect him. What? They're going to leave the season up to Brian Hoyer and third string Jarrett Stidham?
They'd win with those guys.
Of course they need to protect him.
No, they wouldn't. They'd win with those guys. Bill, oh, come on. Bill just explained it to you when Matt was in there. And
they would win some games. We're talking about a 16-game season. We're not talking about two or three to get you by.
I've been on this for well over a year. I think they'd win with those guys, just like they won with Jacoby and they won with Jimmy when Tom was suspended. I think they'd continue to win. I do. Harrison in Hampton Beach. Go ahead, Harrison.
Yeah, hey guys, love the show. Saw an encouraging flash on Sunday from the tight end position. Nice place to Izzo. Other than that, not much from there. We saw Cam, great connection with Olsen. His years there, a couple Pro Bowls. Do you think we see McDaniels look to get Izzo or some of the other guys more involved?
Okay, Greg, tight end situation.
I mean, Izzo was fine. That was a really, really nice route adjustment by him on that play. You know, and he's a guy who he's better down the field, and I think he's better than what he's shown in the past. He was sort of relegated because of injuries. He had to block, and that is not his strength, and that was not his strength again on Sunday. That's just not who he is. I think they think Asiasi gives them a little bit more physicality and potential there. But look, it's going to have to be Asiasi by the end of the season. But I thought one of my other big takeaways once I step back and look at this game was of course, Bill, in the opener with no preseason games, at every opportunity he could go with a veteran at a position, he went with a veteran at the position, including even making their second draft pick, Josh Uche, inactive for this game because, you know, God forbid they let the kids play. I mean, we'll spend $6 million on Aqib Talib when Juwan Williams can do the same thing and you spend a third-round draft pick on him.
Greg, but do you think it's about the tight end, or do you think it's about Newton's ability to throw the ball over the middle of the field? Because after watching,
what's wrong with his ability to throw it over the middle of the field?
Yeah, because I was just saying, after watching this game, it feels to me like between the hashes, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's fine. That's where his strength has been. The problem that you run into and is, you know, you get traffic there, especially if the down and distance get away from you and the scoreboard. I mean, pretty much what happened on Sunday was the script for the Patriots. Get up two scores on somebody, grind the game, make them throw against your secondary. That's the playbook. The big question about this team, because you know it's going to happen, because they're going to go against high-scoring teams in Kansas City and Baltimore, and also, you know, San Francisco had a rough opener, but they'll be a lot better. You know, what happens when they get down two scores? How's the middle of the field look then when you don't have the element of play action?
I mean, in this game, did anyone have any targets other than Izzo on that one play? Was there any tight end targets?
No, that was it.
Demir Byrd didn't get a target either.
I mean, they only threw 19 passes. 11 of them, I think, were to Edelman and Harry.
Right. So,
I mean, might have been 13 of them.
Here's Tim and Quincy. What do you got, Tim, on that issue about stretching the field a little bit?
Well, you know, Belichick, you know, with his drafts, at some point, there's a glaring weakness on offense. They're one player away from whether a tight end or a receiver playmaker for being a contender. And I think that's kind of why Brady left this team, is there's just that one player short on offense. And when would Kraft, you know, go up to Belichick and say, what are we doing on the scouting department in drafting?
Okay, well,
they were a coach away in Tampa.
Okay, he would have gone to him a long time ago on the receiver thing. You know, that is what it is. It's a blind spot for Bill. But if they, again, let's, Greg, just play it out. If they wanted to add, and again, people are going to bring up Odell Beckham, and I think everyone would know how I would feel about that. Like, give me a break.
Yeah.
No shot. But if there's a really good receiver out there or a really good tight end out there, I'd feel more comfortable with Bill going at the tight end versus the receiver.
Yeah, probably, but I think the team needs a receiver more. I think, look, you drafted Asiasi for a reason. And he does have that ability. He's got a little bit of shake. He's got some physicality. He's really good with the ball in his hands. Like, I mean, watching the Bucks on Sunday, not only, you know, did Gronkowski look about where he left off, having lost a step, but O.J. Howard stunk. That guy couldn't get down the field, and people are pining for him, I'm sure, and Njoku in Cleveland's the same way. I'd rather go with Asiasi, not spend the money. I think they need an outside, they need a speed element, and if Damir Bird's not going to be better than what he was on Sunday, and look, I'm going to allow for, it seemed like Byron Jones was on him all day, and Byron Jones looked like an all-pro on Sunday, so maybe it was just the matchup, but Damir Bird couldn't get open at all. And he's supposed to be an upgrade over Philip Dorsett. He did not look like that on Sunday. And if he can't bring the speed element, they have to find it. They need it to threaten, or else people are going to pack in more. They're going to get in the face of Edelman. They're going to get in the face of Harry. Then what do you do? So they need something to threaten on the outside.
Yeah. Okay. I thought Bird looked good on that punt though.
Three up, three down with the big boy right after Murray's up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Now, it's time for three up.
Dives to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
Nice call.
And three down.
I don't even understand the call. You're trying to go vertical on third and four. I'd rather run them on a slant. With his size.
With Greg Bedard of BostonSportsJournal.com. Three up.
And the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
Three down.
He blows.
Here on Felger and Mez.
All right, three studs, three duds from Sunday. Bedard's gone over the film. Do you have your clipboard there, Bedard?
I do. Hang on.
Oh, God, here we go.
Yeah, fumbling through the papers.
Like a prop comic.
Has it got mustard stains on it?
From Scott Main, that's right. Maybe. That was great. That was the freebie. So it's like, Greg knows we do this every week still, but I'm going to ask him who the second star is, and this is what you're going to hear. As he goes through his notes, fumbling around.
Now here's what you're going to hear.
Quiet.
Hammering, hawing, lip smacking. But anyway, okay, three up, three down from the game. Who's your number one star from the game, Greg?
Chase Winovich. I thought he was outstanding. He had a team-leading seven impactful plays in the game. He was able to – they had him lined up on the nose, and he made two successful plays down there. I thought it was great. I want to see what he does against the Seahawks before I get too pants off about it. But so far, so good.
I am stunned, not that you picked Winovich, but that you didn't pick a fat guy in the middle of the line.
Oh, that's coming. Stand by.
No, I know, but still, number one, that's a big step for the big fella.
Go.
Adrian Phillips. I thought I was so pleasantly surprised. But that guy can play. He can play. And again, it's Miami, so who the hell knows? But overall, I think they got themselves a legitimate sort of veteran player on that defense. I liked it.
Okay, second star.
Jermaine Illuminor.
There you go.
He, clean sheet for him. Isaiah Wynn had one as well. I thought he was great. He was physical. I love that he pancaked Kyle Van Noy in his big mouth. So that was fun to watch. But, he sees $50 million in his future at the end of this year. So he's got all the motivation in the world.
I could be so far off base with this one, but I don't even care. David Andrews.
Yep.
I just think that line is completely different when he's in the middle of it. And, you know, there was that one play where Tooney peeled off and pulled and Newton got blown up on. So and it feels like that one was on Newton for not recognizing that he was going to get pressure there on that play. But overall, I don't remember them getting beat a lot up front. I think their offensive line did a hell of a job. And I think Andrews makes a difference.
Third.
Well, one thing I did want to add about Andrews, watch Newton's first touchdown run. A lot of people make it out that, oh, McDaniels schemed it so well. And no, the whole key to the play was David Andrews getting to the second level and taking out a Landon Roberts, who had Newton on the play. And a year ago, there's no way Teddy Karras makes that play. That's the difference between the athletic ability at the center position this year. Number three for me was Newton. I thought he was I was probably most impressed with his ability on the read option, riding the running back a lot, faking guy. I mean, he had Kyle Van Noy and Roberts and all sorts of guys twisted around like pretzels. I thought the accuracy was good, and you know, and I thought overall, just you know, he helped to bring the fun back. It just seemed like a weight was lifted off everybody's shoulder, not having Mr. Mopey around anymore. I mean, you have a guy who is making pennies on the dollar here, and he has the same weapons as Tom Brady. And instead of being the most miserable 8-0 quarterback, he's the happiest 1-0 quarterback.
Mass third star.
Also Cam Newton. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think he was great per se, but he was solid. And you know what? Solid goes a long way with Bill Belichick as your coach.
Okay. Duds. Number one dud.
N'Keal Harry. I thought live, I thought he had a couple good plays. But when I look back, you know, he had a couple positive plays, but they weren't outstanding plays. Of course, the fumble, everybody knows about that. But also that screen pass.
Ugh.
They had probably drilled that all offseason. The whole point of that screen pass is to get a physical player like N'Keal Harry, bully ball, give him a head of steam, get him to be able to run over a defensive back. You know that guy is, I think, 6 inches and 40 pounds smaller than N'Keal Harry, and he put N'Keal Harry on his rear end. That was more embarrassing than the fumble.
It was embarrassing is the right word, too. That play was awful. I told you, we were talking about that yesterday. That bugged the crap out of me, that play. My number one was Stephon Gilmore. Sorry.
I'm sorry, number one dud?
Number one dud. His was Harry, mine was Gilmore. Absolutely. Two PIs, he gave up a reception or two underneath. For a guy that I'm paying that kind of dough and get a $5 million raise, I'm sorry, I need more. I didn't think he was that good in this game.
Do you just want to wear a shirt that says, please blow me? I mean, that's, you're just asking for it. He was good in this game.
He was not good in this game. Please, stop. Again, in the pick. Like, I don't even give him credit for the pick. The receiver fell down, for crying out loud. Now, I'm not telling you the coverage was bad because he was there, but I didn't think Gilmore was good in this game. I don't. I'm sorry, Greg.
Second dud, Greggy.
Maz, I'll wear that T-shirt with you. Stephon Gilmore.
Thank you, Greg.
Oh. Good in this game. He was not good in this game. The pass interference, forget the pocket change that he basically held the Patriots at gunpoint for that he got before this game. And he also gave up a big play to Williams. And who knows what would have happened if Devontae Parker stayed in the game. Devontae Parker eats Stephon Gilmore's lunch. So, I mean, he got out of it that Parker had to check out of the game physically earlier.
Wide receiving core, all of them. That's my second dud. Harry fumbled and was brutal on that screen pass. Edelman dropped one on the first throw of the game, and Bird fumbled a punt. Nice job, fellas.
Third,
no, really, good job.
Third dud, Greg.
I was going to go Nick Folk here, but I'm going to go with the people on Twitter and on BSJ who have been asking me for months, why don't they just sign Steven Goskowski? He's out there. Why don't they get him, huh? Yeah, that nice game last night. Hopefully that's over with.
Third dud is you. Go ahead, you people. Go
Nick,
ahead,
Nick Folk, please. That kick was absolute garbage. Holy crap, what a bad kick.
Back
45 yards.
Back to your phones. Patriots, Newton, Brady, Tampa Bay. We'll get more of Greg's thoughts on that situation down there right after these words again in our long commercial-free segment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Say it.
I didn't say that. Yes, you did.
Yes, they did.
Well, you said it. You said it. I can prove that you said it. You said it.
It's Felger and Mass. 98.5. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, he's had it before. I mean, he knows how to bounce back, and he knew he didn't play very well, and it's not what he expects from himself, nor do we expect. So yeah, I would anticipate him to have a little more grit and a little more determination this week.
So that is Bruce Arians, both after the game, some of which he had to walk back because he blamed Brady for the first interception of Mike Evans. He flipped on that yesterday, but still pretty much at Brady. Didn't play well, not the way he expect, not the way we expect. Expects to have more grit and determination. So, Bedard, do you think this is an early sign of Arians v. Brady?
Well, obviously, it depends how the season goes. But if this continues, like if they get off to an 0-2 start, yeah, I think there's going to be a battle. I couldn't believe, well, actually I can, because like I said, I think Arians is a buffoon. I think his offensive scheme and his thoughts are fine. I don't think he's a very good head coach. Look at what he did when he had his Cardinals team. I forget what year it was. They came out of nowhere one year, went to the NFC Championship game. The next year they were picked to go to the Super Bowl by everybody.
They
were terrible. He doesn't know how to gauge expectations. He doesn't know how to manage a team. And I just think that at some point in time, right now they're trying to run Brady stuff and it's not working. It didn't work against New Orleans. New Orleans is a good team. We'll see how it goes. But if that continues, Arians is going to, he's going to change, because look, he was brought in to fix Jameis and he completely failed at that. Now, all of a sudden, he brings in the greatest quarterback of all time, and all the numbers are going to go down. He's going to, at some point in time, he's going to say, this isn't my fault. He already started.
He has already started. One. He's already started week one. Not my fault. That comment of Billy, I think it's Arians one. This is one that you've heard as well. This is Arians yesterday. He's basically saying, we worked on all of this during the week, and Brady failed in how he played. Go ahead.
He looked like Tom Brady in practice all the time, so it's kind of unusual to see that in the ball game, because they didn't do the things that we didn't get ready for. Everything they did, we thought we were ready for. Some wide receivers had to do a better job of winning one-on-one when he decides to go their way. And he put us in the right run checks a couple of times. So it was a learning experience that way.
Okay. He softened it as he went on there, but basically he's saying, no, we were prepared for everything they threw at us, and he looked like Tom Brady during the week. What happened on Sunday? I mean, that didn't take long, huh?
This guy talks too much.
He does. I couldn't believe that he went to the podium after the game and tried to put that first interception on Brady. It was, you could hear it on the telecast, where as soon as Brady let it go, he's like, Mike, because it was too deep. He expected Evans to go down the field. The guy stops. They must have had there must have been five or six times where Bucks receivers or running backs just stopped on round. Oh, I'm covered, so I'm just going to stop. When does that? That never happens. And so right now it's a battle between, they're trying to do Brady stuff. He's doing the alerts. They didn't do a whole lot of that stuff. And they're trying to run some of Brady stuff. But at some point, there's no way Arians is going to take a loss. He's not going to take an L. He's never going to say, you know what, it's my fault. He's going to put it all on Brady, and there's going to be a big battle.
I love it. Week one. Oh, it's already started. Love it. Meanwhile, what about the other guy? How about Mr. Happy Pants? How about Mr. Tequila Nipple Shot? How's he looking? That's going to lead us to the Mimecast email of the day.
It's the Mimecast
Felga, I really hate you, and I think Maz is a boob.
The Mimecast email of the day. Send one to Felger at 98.5thesportshub.com.
Today's show is protected by Mimecast. Phishing, ransomware, and employees who click on bad links like Bedard going to porn sites can put you out of business. Get protected by Mimecast, the number one email security and resilience companion for Microsoft 365. Learn more at Mimecast, M-I-M-E, Mimecast.com. This is for Maz, who said yesterday that Belichick deserves a medal for getting a fourth-round pick for the corpse of Rob Gronkowski.
Correct.
That we bitched about Bill not getting enough at the time, but in hindsight, a fourth-round pick for that sack was actually a good trade. This emailer, Matt from Lynn, says, Maz, Gronk is toast and the Pats got a fourth for him? Ha! They took that pick and a third and a fifth to get two picks from the Raiders and ended up taking Asiasi, Gronk's replacement, who couldn't even see the field yesterday. Meanwhile, that hack Izzo got 98% of the snaps over him. The other pick the Pats got out of that was something named Cowart. I would much rather have the corpse of Gronkowski this season over those two scrubs by a large margin. Gronk would be by far your second best offensive weapon right now in this stinky high school offense. Probably your best blocker as well. In conclusion, please put your pants back on when it comes to this Patriots team and Bill after they barely squeaked by the bummy Dolphins without their best offensive player, Parker, and best defensive player, Howard. 6-10 is still happening. Good day. Matt from Lynn.
Okay, so again, what does the game have to do with the Gronk deal? They're two totally separate things.
They are, so put that aside. He just threw that in there just for a little sauce. Okay? The point is that Gronk, if he were still on this team, he'd be the second best weapon that Brady has.
Okay, I don't think that's true. Not based on what I saw Sunday. He's done. He looks done. Greg, I thought as bad as Brady was in this game, and I know you don't think he's as bad as I did, but Gronk was putrid. Gronk looked done. I don't know whether you felt the same way.
Well, I mean, it was tough to tell on the pass routes. I will say, you know, that pass down the middle to Gronk late in the game that was almost picked off. First of all, Brady made a bad decision on that play. But that just shows you it was Tampa 2, so the middle linebacker carries him down the field. And Gronk in his prime can outrun that. It's a big play. He's no longer there. But I don't know what Matt in Linfield is talking about, that Gronkowski would be the second best receiver on this team. I mean, you know, yeah, they don't have a whole lot, but Gronkowski is just, he wasn't good at the end when he was here. I mean, I keep hearing from people that he couldn't even get off press coverage in practice. And even Brady knew this. There are people around the league. I wrote this in the offseason about how people have doubts about how good Gronkowski is going to be. There's the whole TB12 aspect where, you know, he wouldn't do squats anymore with the Patriots. And there are more than a few people think that big bruise that he got in the Super Bowl was as a result of him not doing any more squats or any leg work. And so that he's not explosive is not a shock. That Bruce Arians was saying that he looks like was like 25 or whatever in training camp. That was a shock, but no, he's done. I will say he did really good work as a blocker in that game, but he's not much of a receiver. I don't think anybody's expecting him to be that.
Well, what was the emailer's name again? Was it Mike?
Matt from Lynn.
Matt from Lynn. Okay, this is the
guy. I'm sorry, Linfield.
Matt from Linfield. Okay, Matt from Linfield.
A little fancier.
Yeah, a little different. A little different.
Good.
I would say Matt needs to put his pants back on for Gronk. I think he's the guy that's licking the salt off of Gronk's neck and doing the nipple shots. For crying out loud.
That's gross.
Patriots fans need to get this out of their heads. Gronk's not the same guy anymore. He's not even close. Brady might still be remotely close. Gronk, nowhere near the same guy. Like, the idea that somehow a fourth-round pick was a bad return for him is asinine. He looks slow.
But his point about what they did with it might turn out to be true.
Okay, so again, but I sort of again put that in a different category. There's what you get in the trade for the player, and then there's what you do with it. Like, I almost look at those as two separate steps. You want to say that they didn't max out, that none of these guys can play? You might be right. I mean, I'm not going to make that judgment after week one. Let's see what happens with Asiasi. Okay, look, I want to see what happens with that guy first.
I would have taken a seventh-round pick for Gronkowski. I would have taken anything for him, a bag of used balls. I mean, look, there's an advanced metric called Yak Plus. It's basically like a plus-minus. In 2016, he had a 9.4 yards per reception. He ranked first in the league in Yak Plus. In 2018, he was at 4.3, and he was 31st in the league. He fell off a cliff. He's done as a real receiver. He's a possession receiver, now at tight end and a blocker. That's all he is.
I promise, your phones, immediately after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
They're Boston's number one afternoon show.
The most powerful sports radio show in New England.
America's number one afternoon sports show.
Yeah, but we're the biggest.
And number one in your heart.
And I just came here to help your ratings.
Sorry, John. Thank you. Don't need it.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It speaks for itself. You know, if you're throwing an out route, you don't throw it low and inside. And that hasn't been the case up until that one. You know, it was a little bit late on it and probably a better decision to go somewhere else with the ball.
Meanwhile, Arian's still ripping Brady. Unbelievable. Seriously. To your calls with Greg Bedard, Felger, Maz, and Murray here from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Bedard on location. Ryan waiting patiently in West Hampton Beach. What do you got, Ryan?
Hey, guys. Felger, let me ask you a question about Cam, because I think this has got the perfect storm brewing in Foxborough. What I mean by that is if this thing starts to go bad, you know, simplistic offense, his inability to check out of plays, you know, he is the ultimate front runner, and adversity is not his strong suit. He could sink that locker room really quickly. On the other side of that perfect storm, if it starts to go really, really well, 6-0, 7-1, there he knows there's cap space and there's money, and Gilmore just got a bump, right? So he's going to start showing up to these post-game conferences with dollar sign suits, dollar sign change, cash is king. This ends in a disaster. Thanks, boys.
Okay, so, Greg, do you feel this could be an issue, his contract?
I think in a normal year, maybe. I just think that Cam realizes that if he plays by everybody's rules and he does a nice job, like the future is his. He can write his own check at the end of the season. I have a huge problem with this contract, and I've been writing about it all season. I think it's embarrassing that Cam Newton is making basically like $1.75 million. That Steven Gostkowski's should get cut today, and he's going to take home $2.5 million for the whole season.
Hold on. If Gostkowski got cut today, he'd take home $2.5. If Cam Newton got cut today, he'd take home $1.75 or
$1.75. Yep.
That's crazy. That's ridiculous.
It's embarrassing. And yes, Cam signed the contract. Yes, there's a reason why he signed that contract. For some of it wasn't his fault. If it was non-COVID or whatever, he would have gotten a big deal. But when he signed the contract, it was, okay, fine, I'll compete for the job. Not only did he win the job going away, but he got voted a team captain, something Stephon Gilmore has never been voted here. So I think it would be a good message to not only Newton, I'm just talking about guaranteeing his incentives and maybe, you know, getting him to $6 million base, give him an option with incentives to get to about 10. That's it. I'm not talking about forking over a lot of money, but if he's viewed as such a leader in that locker room that he raises everybody's energy, then do right by him. If you do right by Keith.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. They're Boston's number one afternoon show.
The most powerful sports radio show in New England.
America's number one afternoon sports show.
Yeah, but we're the biggest.
And number one in your heart.
And I just came here to help your ratings.
Sorry, John. Thank you. Don't need it.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It speaks for itself. You know, if you're throwing an out route, you don't throw it low and inside. And that hasn't been the case up until that one. You know, it was a little bit late on it and probably a better decision to go somewhere else with the ball.
Meanwhile, Arian's still ripping Brady. Unbelievable. Seriously. To your calls with Greg Bedard. Felger, Maz, and Murray here from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Bedard on location. Ryan waiting patiently in West Hampton Beach. What do you got, Ryan?
Hey, guys. Felger, let me ask you a question about Cam, because I think this has got the perfect storm brewing in Foxborough. What I mean by that is if this thing starts to go bad, you know, simplistic offense, his inability to check out of plays, you know, he is the ultimate front runner, and adversity is not his strong suit. He could sink that locker room really quickly. On the other side of that perfect storm, if it starts to go really, really well, 6-0, 7-1, he knows there's cap space and there's money, and Gilmore just got a bump, right? So he's going to start showing up to these post-game conferences with dollar sign suits, dollar sign chains, cash is king. This ends in a disaster. Thanks, boys.
Okay, so, Greg, do you feel this could be an issue, his contract?
I think I don't. I think in a normal year, maybe. I just think that Cam realizes that if he plays by everybody's rules and he does a nice job, like, the future is his. He can write his own check at the end of the season. I have a huge problem with this contract, and I've been writing about it all season. I think it's embarrassing that Cam Newton is making basically like $1.75 million. That Steven Gostkowski's should get cut today, and he's going to take home $2.5 million for the whole season.
Hold on. If Gostkowski got cut today, he'd take home $2.5. If Cam Newton got cut today, he'd take home $1.75 or
$1.75. Yep.
That's crazy. That's ridiculous.
It's embarrassing. And yes, Cam signed the contract. Yes, there's a reason why he signed that contract. Some of it wasn't his fault. If it was non-COVID or whatever, he would have gotten a big deal. But when he signed the contract, it was, okay, fine, I'll compete for the job. Not only did he win the job going away, but he got voted a team captain, something Stephon Gilmore has never been voted here. So I think it would be a good message to not only Newton, I'm just talking about guaranteeing his incentives and maybe, you know, getting him to $6 million base, give him an option with incentives to get to about 10. That's it. I'm not talking about forking over a lot of money, but if he's viewed as such a leader in that locker room that he raises everybody's energy, then do right by him. If you do right by Cam Newton, the other guys in the locker room are going to be like, okay, nice.
So I agree.
All right, here we go.
I agree. I would strongly advise against taking the cheese and committing long term,
yep.
Doing what they did with Corey Dillon or Randy Moss or one of these guys. No. But if you want to bump them up this year with just a 1 year sort of raise, I think that's totally fine. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to that whatsoever. The question is, will he get chippy if he doesn't get it?
Depends how the year goes. I think the caller's on to something there. If they're playing well later on and he's still at the same money, and then he looks back and goes, well, you gave Gilmore $5 million at the beginning of the year. You told me you didn't have any at the time because you didn't. Now you have it. So why not? You know, you had guys opt out. The circumstances change. You can't give me a little more?
Well, let's see. Let's see just
by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I read you a partial list of quarterbacks that make more money than Cam Newton this year?
Go ahead.
Taysom Hill, Marcus Mariota, Nick Foles, Justin Herbert, Case Keenum, Chase Daniel, AJ McCarron, Andy Dalton, Jeff Driscoll, whoever the hell that is,
ooh,
Colt McCoy, Robert Griffin, Matt Barkley, Matt Schaub.
Wow.
They all make more money than Cam Newton.
Hold on. Did you just say Colt McCoy?
Yep.
He's in the league?
Yeah.
Yep. $2.25
million. Chase Daniel.
AJ McCarron?
Yep. Another one.
$4
million. I mean, these are just suck backups.
Wow.
Yep. Those are just backups.
All right, so keep an eye on that one. I like it. Stephen Lynn. Go ahead, Steve. Lynn, not Lynn Field. Go.
Lynn Field. Mike, you there?
Yeah, Steve.
Mike, about 10 minutes, Mike. He did an awesome job, Mike, past on Sunday, Mike. He pulled that ball, Mike. He was a ball. Awesome, man. Yeah, it's good, Mike. He's good.
He was really good, Steve. I agree. I do wonder what that fella sounds like when he gets through back there. Whew. I think his friend hands him the phone or something. But Stephen Lynn, he calls all the time. Newton did a very good job, Greg. That's what he said inside of all that.
The call screener
did great.
Not.
Yep.
but I also agree that there were no tight window throws, which I would point out with Brady all the time too. It's like we come out of these games, and it's not that Brady's the best ever. I'm not saying like he sucks, but do you realize how many games that Brady had where he's throwing to Julian Edelman over the middle,
mm-hmm,
and there's no one within 5 yards of the guy. But, you know, Brady is not the only guy, it turns out, who can hit Julian Edelman wide open over the middle.
Yeah, but I do think that – I think a lot of Sunday, and we'll see in Seattle, but I thought a lot of Sunday had to do with the Dolphins. I thought the game plan from Brian Flores and Josh Boyer was complete garbage. I couldn't believe that they came into this game. And even their players talked earlier this week about how, yeah, we weren't really prepared for some of that stuff. Like, what? What did you think Cam Newton was going to run? Did you think they were going to run the Tom Brady, you know, shotgun? He's going to survey field, 5 receivers going down the field. Of course they were going to do that stuff. And they were in man-to-man too much. They made it way too early, easy for the Patriots. And I think Seattle Pete Carroll, you know, coming out of college at USC, a lot of this stuff is built into his defense, sort of feathering the end, you know, with the read option and all that stuff. So I think they're going to be much better prepared for it. They're much faster. They're much more experienced. They fly to the ball. They got Jamal Adams, who's the best run tackling safety in the game. So I think it's going to be a much tougher challenge on Sunday.
So certainly, I just saw it. I like that first series of the third quarter, Greg, where, yeah, he, you know, Edelman was open, and even the accuracy on some of those, if you really pick it apart, wasn't perfect. All I liked was rhythm, you know, rhythm with Edelman setting the tone on offense. And it's like, that to me is still the, you know, with Brady anyway, the bread and butter of the offense. Yeah. Brady to Edelman, middle of the field, possession throws, moving the chains. That to me is just, that's the heartbeat of the offense when Brady was here. And I just like to see that Newton, you know, had that at least for those series in his first game. I thought that was a good sign.
Yeah, I thought the big adjustment sort of at halftime was just to increase the tempo a little bit. And that's always been an issue with me with Newton, watching him in Carolina. The play calls are slow. He gets to the line, the ready, everything's too slow. Like, let's get going. Let's take it to the Dolphins and put them on the defensive. And I thought they did that well to open the second half.
So true. The tempo. It's true.
Him and the Patriots have always been great at that, controlling the tempo of the game. But, always.
But even the cadence. I mean, Greg's right. I get the same thing with Aaron Rodgers. It's like, snap the ball already, dude. Like, get.
That's the way Cam always was, though, with the Carolina Panthers. Yeah.
Yes, it's so true. And it's like, there's no tempo there. And you saw it in that third quarter. Nick in North Attleboro. Go ahead, Nick.
You know, hey, what's up, guys? I'm sick of these Matt and Linfield saying that Belichick's not doing well with his personnel transactions. Anyone who was under Belichick's tutelage and is still in the league now sucks. Joe Judge, loss. Phil O'Brien, non-competitive loss. Brian Flores, non-competitive loss. Matty P, embarrassing loss. Jamie Collins, kicked out of the game. Tom Brady, two picks and a loss. Gostkowski, four missed kicks and I guess a win. Jimmy G, lost to a second-year QB and second-year head coach. I guess if you want to get personal, Gronk and Deion Lewis were non-factors. And hey, Jim Murray, do you think Lane Johnson had fun giving up eight sacks to that football team down in Washington? Thanks, guys. I'll hang up.
No, did you forget Gostkowski, too? Did he mention him? How do you people live with yourselves? I don't know why this, it really does. It really bothered me last night that there's like these photos going around of sad Matt Patricia in a box with sad Tom Brady and Jamie Collins butting his head into the ref and getting tossed out and Gostkowski missing yet another field goal. Bill wins again. Bill got it right. Like, how come? But then we get blood to death when we dare ever say anything negative about those players when they're here. Like, God, you people sometimes. Jesus, how do you live with
yourselves?
They're children,
Murray. They're two-year-olds. A freaking collection of two-year-olds.
You loved them when they were here, but now they don't have the uniform on. They left us, and we're butthurt about it. Man, Bill got it right. Ugh. Ugh.
Well, the thing about the coaches is different than the players. I mean, the
coaching tree stinks. It's always going to stink.
That doesn't look good for Bill. That looks bad for Bill.
Right. Correct.
Don't you understand?
Right.
It's like, don't you get it? That, you know, well, I mean, I just only it reflects well on Bill. That no one else, or it's at least surprising. Not one of these guys? Not one of those guys? I mean, it's one clown after the next. I mean,
yep.
I think this Joe Judge is a complete clown.
Yep.
I mean, I think he's a complete clown. Matt Patricia, which we'll get to, it is a freaking embarrassment.
He's a boob.
Yes.
I mean, he's an embarrassment.
He's a boob.
And it's like...
Flores, who I liked and I thought did a great job with the team, but they stripped down to the bones last year. This performance in week one, I was like, no, never mind.
I mean, it's just so one bag of crap after the next. But the players leaving teams, I mean, I hate to burst the bubble of that caller or any of you like on Twitter that Murray was talking about. Most players who switch teams don't work out for their new one in football. If you just look it up, if you just stack it up and look at what the team does, the player does on his new team versus his old team, especially if it's a free agent or a big name, almost always, they do worse at their new stop than their old stop. It's just the way it is in that sport. Do you think that the LA Chargers are some sort of master magicians, you know, great personnel, like some sort of geniuses?
No.
Because Philip Rivers went to Indianapolis and sucked in week one? Or is it just older guys that go from one team to the next generally aren't as good as they were previously?
Yeah, Anthony Lynn right again.
It's just the way it is. You sign the free agent contract, you generally don't live up to it. It's just the way it is in that sport, frankly, in most sports. but you want to turn it into something else because I guess it makes you feel better, so go nuts.
Felger.
Yeah.
Did those players with the Patriots that left in the offseason, did they just start to suck in this offseason, or maybe they started sucking when they were still with the Patriots?
Yeah, no, they sucked after they left.
Oh, okay.
10 questions with Bedard right after this.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.